My constant companion, pain. It gnawed at the junction between my enhanced muscles and the reinforced bone beneath, a silent reminder of glory fading. I flexed my right hand, watching the tremor that had begun 3 weeks prior. The augmented tendons twitched beneath scarred skin, no longer responding with the precision that had made me a living weapon of the Emperor. I am Carius Vex, Thunder Warrior of the 9th Primus Cohort, Unifier, Conqueror, Butcher, soon to be Relic. The barracks stank of antiseptic and sweat, of fear poorly masked behind bravado. The Medici servitors had visited again that morning, administering treatments that grew less effective with each cycle. My battle brothers bore it with stoicism, but I saw the truth in their eyes, the same tremors, the same pain, the same knowledge that our bodies were betraying us. Eric Taranis, our legendary commander, had not been seen for 17 days. Rumors spread through the ranks like a fever that he had been summoned to the palace, that he had been executed, that he had fled. None seemed plausible for the man who had led us through the bloodiest campaigns of the Unification Wars, but uncertainty bred paranoia, and paranoia was becoming our most faithful ally. The setting sun cast long shadows across the training grounds as I made my way to the eastern perimeter. My armor, once a perfect extension of my enhanced form, now chafed against deteriorating muscle tissue. The weight that I had once carried effortlessly now required conscious effort with each step. Weakness, unacceptable weakness. Beyond our compound lay the sprawling expanse of Unity, the first city of the new Imperium built upon the bones of ancient Terra. The Emperor's palace dominated the horizon, a monument to the new age we had helped create through blood and fire. Below it, carved into the ancient Himalayan mountains, lay the laboratories where our replacements were being forged, the Legion's Astartes. The whispered name had first reached us after the siege of the fortress of Malin Sen, a new breed of warriors, more stable, more controlled, more perfect. The word had come from a dying thunder warrior named Gath, his mind fracturing even as his organs liquefied within his chest. He had overheard two gold-armored custodians discussing the next generation while they thought him unconscious in the Medici tent. I remembered the first time I had seen one of these new warriors. It was during the cleanup operations following our victory over the Nordic conclaves, a small contingent of soldiers in unmarked armor observing our methods from a distance. They were smaller than us, less physically imposing, yet there was something in their disciplined movements that spoke of deadly efficiency. They watched us like scientists studying specimens, and when I caught the eye of their leader, I saw neither respect nor contempt, only cold assessment. My mind drifted back to the glory days when our purpose had been clear and our bodies had responded with savage perfection. The campaign against the techno-barbarians of Ursh had been the pinnacle of our prowess. I remembered the Battle of the Crimson Plains, where our cohort had broken the back of Caligan's elite guard. The enemy had technology salvaged from the Dark Age, gravitic disruptors and neural shredders, but they lacked our ferocity, our absolute commitment to victory. We had waded into their formations like demigods of ancient myth, each thunder warrior worth 100 normal men. My battle brothers and I had torn through their ranks, our enhanced muscles and reinforced bones making us virtually unstoppable on the battlefield. I remembered the terror in their eyes as they realized their weapons could not halt our advance. I remembered the hot spray of blood across my face as I tore a warlord's head from his shoulders with my bare hands. The Emperor had walked with us then, his golden armor gleaming in the sun, his psychic might turning the very air around him into a weapon. We were his instruments, his thunder warriors, and we had known no equal in battle. The campaign against the Pan-Pacific Empire had been different, a grinding war of attrition against an enemy that controlled vast swathes of ancient manufacturing facilities. They had fielded armies of combat servitors and cyborg soldiers, waves of mindless flesh and metal that had tested even our superhuman endurance. The siege of their capital had lasted 73 days, and by the end, the waters of the Pacific had run red with blood for kilometers. During that campaign, the first signs of our deterioration had appeared. Kine, a veteran of 100 battles, had collapsed during an assault, blood pouring from his eyes and ears as his enhanced nervous system misfired catastrophically. 2 days later, Vorgeth had fallen into a battle frenzy that had not abated until he had slaughtered not only the enemy but three of our own before Taranis himself had been forced to put him down. Isolated incidents, we had told ourselves. Anomalies, we had been fools. The eastern perimeter offered a clear view of the Imperial Palace and the mountains beyond. I often came here to think, to remember, to plan. A custodian stood at the far end of the wall, his golden armor catching the last rays of sunlight. They were appearing more frequently now, these silent watchers, always observing, never interfering. Their presence was yet another sign that our time was coming to an end. The genetic degradation was accelerating. Each day brought new failures among our ranks. Ulgin had awakened screaming 3 nights prior, his enhanced muscle tissue rupturing beneath his skin as it rejected the very augmentations that had made him superhuman. The Medici servitors had taken him away, and he had not returned. No explanation had been given, and none of us had asked, we knew. My own symptoms were still manageable compared to some. The tremors, the pain, the occasional lapses in memory, but there were other, more disturbing signs. Moments of rage that bordered on psychosis, paranoid thoughts that whispered of betrayal and abandonment. I found myself checking my weapons more frequently, sleeping less, watching the shadows. I was not alone in this. The entire 9th Primus cohort was on edge. Tensions flared over minor slights, and twice in the past week, arguments had escalated to bloodshed. We were coming apart physically and mentally, and the treatments that had once maintained our enhanced bodies were now little more than palliative care. From my vantage point, I could see the shuttles that regularly traveled between the palace and the mountain laboratories. Sometimes they carried materials, sometimes personnel. Once I had glimpsed a group of young males, boys really, being escorted into one of the facilities. They had moved with unnatural discipline for one so young, their gazes fixed forward, their bodies already showing signs of the initial chemical treatments that would transform them into something new. Our replacements. The Thunder Warriors had been created for a specific purpose, the unification of Terra under the Emperor's rule. We were weapons of conquest, designed for maximum shock value and overwhelming force. Subtlety had never been our purpose. We had fulfilled our function with brutal efficiency, bringing the scattered techno-barbarian kingdoms to heal, crushing resistance, and establishing the foundation upon which the Imperium would be built. But the galaxy beckoned, and the Emperor's vision extended far beyond Terra. The Great Crusade would require warriors of a different kind, more stable, more adaptable, designed for extended campaigns across the stars rather than the lightning warfare of the Unification Wars. We were becoming obsolete. The realization had come gradually to most of my battle brothers, but its impact was no less devastating. We had been created to serve the Emperor, to fight and die in his name. Our purpose was our existence. Without it, what remained? I turned from the view as darkness fell, making my way back through the compound. The Medici facility was operating at full capacity, its lights burning through the night as the Adepts fought a losing battle against our genetic deterioration. The sound of a Thunder Warrior's agonized scream echoed across the parade ground, another warrior's enhanced physiology turning against him. In the armory, I found Keldor and Vistus performing maintenance on their weapons with obsessive precision. Neither acknowledged my presence as I collected cleaning supplies for my own gear. The silence between us was heavy with unspoken fears. We had fought side by side for decades, had saved each other's lives countless times, but now suspicion clouded even these bonds of brotherhood. Rumors had begun circulating of Thunder Warriors going missing, not just the ones taken by the Medici servitors, but warriors who had simply vanished from their posts or during routine patrols outside the compound. Some whispered of desertion, others of secret executions. The truth remained elusive, but the fear was palpable. 3 days earlier, I had witnessed a confrontation between Tyrannes' second-in-command, Goda, and a custodian. No words had been exchanged that I could hear, but the tension had been unmistakable. Goda had returned to the barracks afterward, his face a mask of cold fury, and had immediately called a meeting of the senior Thunder Warriors. I had not been included, but the increased security patrols and weapons checks that followed spoke volumes. We were preparing for something, though whether for war or last stand remained unclear. The night before, I had discovered a hidden cache of combat stims and genetic stabilizers in Tyrannes' quarters while searching for information about his disappearance. The supplies had been carefully hidden and inventoried, enough to temporarily halt the degradation in perhaps 50 warriors. Not enough for all of us. Choices had been made. Some would be saved, at least for a time. Others would be left to their fate. I had not reported my discovery. Trust had become as rare as effective treatment. As I returned to my quarters, I passed the training cages where newer inductees to our ranks, though newer was relative, as no true Thunder Warriors had been created in years, were practicing close quarters combat techniques. Their movements were powerful but increasingly erratic. One warrior, whose name I did not know, suddenly collapsed mid-strike, his body convulsing as neural pathways misfired. His training partners stepped back, watching dispassionately as Medici servitors rushed in. None offered assistance. None showed concern. This was becoming too common to elicit emotion. My quarters were Spartan, as befitted a warrior of the Emperor. A bed, a weapons rack, a small shrine bearing the Imperial Aquila. I had few personal possessions, a fragment of armor from my first battle, a crude map of Terra showing the territories we had conquered, a ceremonial knife presented to me by the Emperor himself after the siege of Mollen Sen. I ran my fingers over the knife's hilt, remembering the weight of his hand on my shoulder, the pride I had felt in that moment. Had he known even then that we were temporary, that we were flawed creations destined for obsolescence? Of course he had. The Emperor's vision extended far beyond what any of us could comprehend. We were tools, nothing more, effective tools for a specific task, but tools nonetheless. And tools that had outlived their usefulness were discarded. The tremor in my hand worsened as I prepared my armor for the next day's training exercises. The gene degradation was progressing. I estimated I had perhaps 3 months before the symptoms became debilitating, 6 before they became terminal, unless something changed. Unless Tyrannes returned with a miracle, unless the Emperor remembered his Thunder Warriors and the sacrifices we had made in his name. Word had reached us that a final great campaign was being planned, a battle that would mark the completion of Terra's unification. Mount Ararat, where the last significant force of techno-barbarians had established a nearly impregnable fortress. They had held out against previous assaults, their mountain stronghold proving resistant to conventional attacks. It would be a fitting final battle for the Thunder Warriors, a last chance for glory before our bodies failed us completely, a warrior's death if death was to be our fate. As night settled over the compound, I heard the distinctive sound of custodian armor in the corridor outside my quarters. They were making their rounds again, their golden forms moving silently through our barracks like ghosts, watching, always watching. I checked my weapons one last time before lying down, placing my bolter within easy reach. Sleep would not come easily, as it rarely did anymore. The pain would see to that, as would the dreams, dreams of past glories now fading, of a future denied, of betrayal lurking just beyond the horizon. Tomorrow would bring us one day closer to Mount Ararat, one day closer to our final battle, one day closer to the end of the Thunder Warriors. The morning of battle dawned red over the Caucasus wastes, fitting, I thought, as I checked my armor seals for the third time. My trembling fingers struggled with the mechanisms that had once been second nature. Our final sanctioned battle would begin with Terra's blood-red sunrise, and likely end with our own blood soaking into ancient soil. The priest kings had ruled these barren wastelands for centuries before the Emperor's rise. Their warrior cult combined archaic religious practices with scavenged Dark Age technology, creating an army of augmented zealots who fought with mindless devotion. Intelligence reports indicated they had assembled nearly 200,000 fighters in their mountain strongholds. Against them, the Emperor had deployed just 500 Thunder Warriors, 500 deteriorating weapons of a bygone age. The deployment zone buzzed with controlled chaos as my brothers performed their final preparations. Armor joints were oiled, weapon systems checked, combat stims administered. The Medici servitors moved through our ranks methodically, delivering measured doses of the stabilizing compounds that would, temporarily, hold our failing bodies together through the coming slaughter. Keldor stood nearby, his massive frame hunched forward as a servitor injected a viscous blue fluid directly into his spine. His face betrayed no pain, but I noticed how his knuckles whitened as he gripped his bolter. The implants along his shoulders pulsed visibly beneath his skin, the muscle tissue surrounding them inflamed and distorted. He had perhaps weeks remaining before complete systemic failure. Across the staging area, I spotted 5 custodians observing our preparations. Unlike previous engagements where they had maintained a discreet distance, today they moved openly among us, their Oromite armor gleaming unnaturally bright against the drab surroundings. They carried data slates and Auspex devices, recording readings and observations with cold efficiency. One paused near a thunder warrior named Jihredek, scanning him with a handheld device before making notations. Jihredek had suffered a severe episode of neural misfiring 3 days prior but had recovered enough to fight. The custodian's interest seemed clinical rather than concerned. They were not here as allies, they were here as observers, as data collectors. The battlefield stretched before us, a vast plain of rust-colored rock and sparse vegetation leading to the stepped mountain fortresses of the Priest Kings. Ancient defensive works blended with newer fortifications, creating a layered defense that had repelled 3 previous Imperial Army assaults. The terrain offered minimal cover, meaning our advance would be exposed to enemy fire for nearly 2 kilometers. A suicide mission for normal troops. For Thunder Warriors, it was Tuesday. The command to advance came without ceremony, a simple Vox signal that triggered our cohort's forward movement. 500 enhanced warriors moving as a single destructive force across the crimson field. The enemy's first salvo arrived seconds later, a barrage of artillery shells and energy weapons that churned the earth around us. 3 warriors to my left disappeared in a blinding flash as a plasma shell found its mark. I felt nothing for them, they had died as weapons should, in service to their purpose. My own weapons responded automatically, muscle memory guiding my movements despite the pain flaring through my enhanced nervous system. My bolter kicked against my shoulder as I fired on the move, each mass reactive shell finding a target among the defenders on the outer walls. Beside me, Vistus unleashed a stream of promethium from his flamer, the superheated chemical washing over a cluster of enemy heavy weapons teams that had revealed their position. The first wave of Priest King Zealots met us halfway across the field, augmented humans with crude cybernetic enhancements and frag grenades strapped to their torsos. They rushed forward without concern for their lives, seeking only to close with us and detonate their deadly payloads. I emptied my bolter's magazine into their front ranks, watching bodies explode into red mist, then drew my gladius as they closed to melee range. Combat clarity descended like a familiar shroud. The world narrowed to the space immediately around me, targets to be eliminated, threats to be neutralized. My blade found the junction between a zealot's augmetic arm and organic shoulder, severing the limb in a spray of blood and hydraulic fluid. A backhand swing opened another from sternum to pelvis, spilling intestines and crude mechanical implants onto the rocky ground. A third attacker leapt at me, his mouth stretched in a wordless battle cry. I caught him by the throat, crushed his windpipe with a squeeze, and used his body as a shield against a fourth attacker's blade before discarding the corpse. This was what we had been made for, this perfect symphony of violence, this unmatched battlefield dominance. Deeper into the enemy formation, I witnessed Keldor tear through a squad of elite guards, his chain axe roaring as it shredded armor, flesh, and bone. His movements displayed the terrifying speed that made Thunder Warriors so feared, too fast for normal human perception to track effectively, too powerful for normal human weapons to stop. He decapitated 3 enemies with a single sweeping blow, then drove his armored fist through another's chest, ripping out the man's augmetic heart in a shower of sparks and gore. The battle stims pumping through my enhanced circulatory system pushed my body beyond even its superhuman limits. Pain receded, replaced by heightened awareness and savage purpose. My muscles performed with a fluidity I hadn't experienced in months, the tremors temporarily suppressed by the chemical cocktail flooding my system. I knew I would pay for this artificial reprieve later. The stims accelerated our genetic degradation even as they temporarily masked its symptoms, but in that moment I cared only for the kill. We reached the first defensive wall within 20 minutes of engagement, leaving a carpet of enemy dead in our wake. The Priest King's forces fought with religious fervor but lacked the tactical flexibility to counter our assault. Their static defenses, designed to repel conventional armies, proved inadequate against warriors who could scale sheer walls in seconds and punch through reinforced doors with their bare hands. It was during the breach of the second wall that I witnessed the first catastrophic gene failure of the battle. Erkin, a veteran of 100 campaigns and one of my oldest battle brothers, was mounting the rampart beside me when his enhanced musculature began to convulse. The overstressed tissue ruptured beneath his armor plating, blood spraying from the joints and seals. He didn't scream, Thunder Warriors rarely did, but his eyes found mine in a moment of perfect clarity. He knew what was happening. His body was tearing itself apart from the inside. Instead of falling, Erkin charged forward with even greater ferocity, smashing into a knot of defenders with such force that he shattered their formation. His fists pulverized enemy soldiers even as his own organs liquefied within his chest cavity. He fought for nearly 3 more minutes in this state before a lucky shot from an enemy heavy weapon took his head clean off. By then, he had killed at least 30 defenders and created the breach our forces needed to penetrate deeper into the fortress. A warrior's death, the best any of us could hope for now. The inner sanctum of the Priest Kings lay before us, a massive domed structure carved into the living rock of the mountain. Enemy resistance stiffened as we approached, their elite guard forming a shield wall backed by heavy weapons teams. Disciplined volleys of laser fire cut down several Thunder Warriors who had advanced too eagerly. I noted the custodians observing from an elevated position, recording the encounter but making no move to join the assault. Taranis appeared at the front of our formation, his massive frame easily recognizable despite the blood and grime covering his armor. His presence electrified the Thunder Warriors around him. If the gene degradation affected him, he showed no sign of it as he raised his thunder hammer and charged the enemy line. We followed without hesitation, a wave of transhuman destruction crashing against the last organized resistance of the Priest Kings. The slaughter that followed barely deserved the name battle. We tore through their lines with methodical brutality, our enhanced strength and speed rendering their defensive tactics obsolete. I drove my combat knife through an enemy commander's faceplate, twisted the blade in his brain, then used his corpse as a makeshift club to batter down his honor guard. Around me, my battle brothers engaged in similar displays of transhuman violence, each kill more savage than the last as battle stims and genetic degradation pushed us toward the razor's edge between controlled fury and mindless berserker rage. Meeker crossed that line midway through the assault. I saw the change come over him, his movements becoming erratic, his attacks increasingly frenzied. He began striking at anything that moved, friend or foe. When Keldor attempted to restrain him, Meeker tore through his armor with augmented fingers and ripped a chunk of flesh from his shoulder. It took 3 Thunder Warriors to finally subdue him, and even then he continued to thrash and howl until Taranis himself delivered the mercy blow that ended his suffering. Another brother lost not to enemy action, but to our own flawed creation. By sunset, the battle was over. The Priest King's forces had been annihilated to the last man, their mountaintop stronghold reduced to smoking rubble. Of the 500 Thunder Warriors who had begun the assault, 378 remained standing. Victory by any military standard. Another triumph for the Emperor's unification campaign. Yet as I surveyed the aftermath, watching servitors collect the bodies of fallen Thunder Warriors for transport back to the compound, I felt no triumph. Only certainty that our purpose was nearly fulfilled, and with it, our usefulness. The custodians had withdrawn immediately after the battle, departing in sleek gunships bound for the Imperial Palace. Their data collected, their observations complete. I had caught one scanning my biometric readings during a lull in the fighting, his golden helm tilting slightly as he noted something of apparent interest. When our eyes met, he had simply turned away, dismissing me as one might a weapon being returned to the armory. That night, as we established camp among the ruins of the Priest King's fortress, Taranis called a meeting of the senior Thunder Warriors. 20 of us gathered in what had once been the inner sanctum, our armor still bearing the evidence of the day's slaughter. The chamber was secured against surveillance, swept for vox thieves and scrying devices by Keldor, who had developed a paranoid expertise in counterintelligence. Taranis revealed what some of us had already suspected. Intelligence gathered from intercepted communications between custodian officers indicated that the Thunder Warriors had reached the end of their operational lifespan. The new Legion's Astartes were nearly ready for full deployment, their gene seed stable, their capabilities proven in limited engagements. Plans were already in motion for the Thunder Warriors' decommissioning following a grand triumph to celebrate Terra's complete unification. Decommissioning, such a bloodless word for what would be mass execution. The evidence was compelling. Medici supplies for Thunder Warriors had been steadily reduced over the past year. Combat deployments had become increasingly hazardous, with minimal support and against overwhelming odds. The custodian's behavior had shifted from comradely to observational. Most damning was a partial schematic Taranis had obtained showing the planned parade grounds for the triumph ceremony, complete with designated firing positions overlooking the Thunder Warriors formation. We were to be disposed of publicly, our death serving as both propaganda for the Emperor's might and confirmation of the new era dawning for the Imperium. The Thunder Warriors would pass into legend, our actual fate obscured by tales of heroic last stands against impossible odds. As the meeting concluded, I realized that the tremor in my hand had returned with greater intensity. The battle stims were wearing off, and with their passing came the familiar pain of my body's accelerated deterioration. Around me, other Thunder Warriors showed similar signs, muscle spasms, labored breathing, momentary lapses in concentration. Our bodies were failing us, just as our creator had designed them to do. The Crimson Field had been our last sanctioned battle, but I knew with cold certainty it would not be our final fight. Taranis' eyes held a dangerous resolve as he dismissed us, his final instructions clear without needing explicit statement. Prepare, gather what supplies could be secured. Trust no one outside our immediate brotherhood. The Emperor had created us for war. It seemed fitting that war would be our response to betrayal. Dawn broke gray and cold over Mount Ararat. My body ached worse than ever before as I prepared my war gear for what Taranis had called our triumphant return. The victory at the Crimson Field had taken its toll, not from enemy action, but from the accelerated deterioration the combat stims had triggered. My primary heart stuttered every 17th beat. The tremor in my right hand had spread to my forearm. Blood vessels had ruptured across my chest and back, creating a map of broken capillaries beneath my skin. We were dying, all of us, but we would die as warriors, not as discarded tools. 378 Thunder Warriors had survived the battle against the Priest Kings. 3 days later, our number stood at 351. The rest had succumbed to catastrophic organ failure or neurological collapse. Their bodies had been processed by Medici servitors with cold efficiency, their gene seed, what remained of it, harvested for analysis before their corpses were incinerated. No honors, no remembrance, just clinical disposal. The journey back to the Imperial staging area took us through a narrow mountain pass that wound between sheer rock faces. A perfect ambush location, I noted with professional detachment. Taranis had positioned scouts ahead of our main formation, but their reports came back clean. No enemy activity, no Imperial army units, no custodians. The absence of our golden armored watchers struck me as particularly ominous. Since the Emperor had withdrawn from direct battlefield command, the custodians had been our constant shadows, observing, recording, evaluating. Their sudden disappearance suggested either reassignment to more important duties or preparation for action elsewhere. Midway through the pass, Keldor fell into step beside me. The wound on his shoulder from Meeker's attack had not healed properly, the edges of the torn flesh darkened with necrosis. Combat stims masked the pain but could not halt the spread of cellular death. He would not survive another week without extensive surgical intervention. The look in his eyes told me he knew this, he had accepted it. His only concern now was choosing the manner of his end. The mountains gave way to rolling foothills as we approached the rendezvous point. An Imperial army encampment sprawled across the valley floor, its perimeter marked by prefabricated defensive walls and weapons emplacements. Shuttlecraft moved between landing pads, ferrying supplies and personnel. The scene appeared normal routine, but something felt wrong. The defensive guns faced inward, not outward. Taranis halted our column 500 meters from the main gate. He dispatched Goda with 20 warriors to establish a forward position while the rest of us maintained combat readiness. Standard procedure for approaching friendly installations after successful operations, but I noted how Taranis positioned our heavy weapons teams with clear fields of fire toward the Imperial camp. He knew. Through magnoculars, I observed unusual activity within the camp. Imperial army units were forming up in assault patterns rather than parade formations. Armored vehicles had taken position at strategic junctures. And there, on an elevated command platform, stood 12 custodians, their golden armor unmistakable even at this distance. They were not positioned as honor guards or observers, but as commanders. My enhanced hearing picked up the distinctive whine of anti-grav engines before my eyes spotted the source. 3 gunships approached from the east, their sleek profiles marked with the Imperial Aquila. They maintained high altitude, circling our position like carrion birds awaiting death. Goda's advance party reached the main gate. The massive doors remained closed, a violation of protocol for returning victorious troops. Vox communications from the camp cited security procedures and requested that the Thunder Warriors disarm before entry. Even from my position half a kilometer away, I could read Goda's body language, tension, suspicion. His hand never strayed far from his bolt pistol as he continued negotiations with the gate commander. A flash of golden light erupted from within the camp. Goda's head disappeared in a spray of crimson mist. The custodian guardian spear that had taken it fired again, its energy discharge vaporizing the chest of another Thunder Warrior. The trap was sprung. The camp's defensive guns opened fire simultaneously, their targeting systems locked onto our forward elements. Heavy bolter rounds tore through enhanced transhuman flesh, while missile launchers targeted our more heavily armored warriors. Goda's advance party died in seconds, their bodies shredded by the concentrated firepower. Tarani's reaction was immediate. His thunder hammer rose and fell, the signal to deploy according to contingency plans we had developed during our night in the Priest King's fortress. We had anticipated betrayal, though not its scale. The Imperial army swarmed from the camp like insects from a disturbed hive. Thousands of troops supported by rhino transports and light tanks advanced in disciplined formations. They were not the elite of the Emperor's forces, but they were numerous and well-equipped. Against 300 Thunder Warriors, they might have stood a chance. Against 300 desperate Thunder Warriors with nothing to lose, they were merely obstacles. We met their front lines with calculated savagery. My bolter emptied its magazine into the lead rhino, the mass reactive shells detonating against its engine block. The transport veered sharply, crushing several infantry squads before exploding in a fireball that consumed a dozen more. I drew my gladius and charged through the gap, my enhanced muscles propelling me into the enemy formation at speeds no unaugmented human could track effectively. What followed was butchery. My blade opened throats and severed limbs. My armored fists crushed helmets and ribcages. Allah's round scored my pauldron, leaving a blackened furrow in the ceramite. I responded by hurling a fallen soldier's combat knife with such force that it penetrated the shooter's flak armor and heart, pinning him to the transport behind him. For precious minutes, it seemed we might break through. The Imperial Army units fell back under our onslaught, their casualties mounting as each Thunder Warrior carved a bloody path through their ranks. Keldor led a flanking maneuver that collapsed their eastern perimeter. Vistus and his heavy weapons team established a fire base that suppressed enemy armor attempting to reinforce the collapsing front. Then the custodians entered the fray. They dropped from the circling gunships, their golden armor catching the midday sun as they descended on jump packs. 10 of the Emperor's personal guardians, each a match for multiple Thunder Warriors even at our peak, and we were far from our peak. The first custodian landed 30 meters from my position. His guardian spear swept in a golden arc, decapitating 2 Thunder Warriors before they could react. A third managed to raise his chainsword in defense, only to have both the weapon and his arm severed at the elbow by a return stroke. The custodian moved with fluid grace that belied his massive armored form, each movement perfectly economical, each strike precisely lethal. I had fought alongside custodians during the unification wars. I had never fought against one. The prospect filled me with both dread and a strange exhilaration. If I must die, let it be against a worthy opponent. But Tarani's orders came through my vox bead, sharp, urgent, allowing no debate, fall back to position secundus. Disengage from custodian elements, preserve forces for the primary objective. The last order confirmed what I had suspected since seeing the ambush unfold. This was not merely about survival. Tarani's had a target in mind. Disengaging from the Imperial Army units proved challenging but achievable. They lacked the speed to pursue effectively once we broke contact. The custodians were another matter. They pressed our retreating forces relentlessly, their guardian spears claiming another 7 Thunder Warriors during our fighting withdrawal. Position Secundus was a natural choke point in the foothills, a narrow defile between steep rock formations that would channel pursuers into a kill zone. Tarani's had identified it during our approach, his centuries of tactical experience recognizing its defensive potential. We reached it 17 minutes after the ambush began, our numbers reduced to just over 200. The wounded were numerous, their injuries complicated by our inherent genetic instability. Law's burns refused to clot properly. Bolt wounds leaked not just blood, but the specialized serums that maintained our enhanced physiologies. Field medici treatments proved minimally effective, the emergency stims merely delaying the inevitable organ failures. Vistus established interlocking fields of fire covering the approach to our position. Keldor organized the remaining heavy weapons into hardpoints that could be repositioned as needed. I took command of our most combat-effective warriors, forming a mobile reserve that could reinforce threatened sectors. The Imperial forces approached with uncharacteristic caution, having learned the cost of underestimating cornered Thunder warriors. Their advance elements probed our defenses with long-range fire, testing our response patterns. The custodians had withdrawn temporarily, regrouping, I suspected, rather than retreating. Tyrannes moved among us, his massive form somehow unbowed despite the wounds he had sustained. Blood leaked from a deep gash in his thigh, and his left arm hung partially useless from a custodian spear thrust that had penetrated his shoulder joint. Still, his presence steadied our lines. His voice, hoarse from stim-induced dehydration but still commanding, directed our defensive preparations with the same strategic brilliance that had won 100 campaigns during the Unification Wars. The respite lasted 23 minutes. The renewed attack began with artillery bombardment, precision shells targeting our heavy weapons positions. Vistus died in the first salvo, his body vaporized by a direct hit that also claimed 4 other Thunder warriors. The barrage walked methodically across our defensive line, forcing us to abandon prepared positions and seek whatever cover the rocky terrain provided. Under cover of the bombardment, Imperial Army stormtroopers advanced in dispersed formations, their carapace armor offering better protection than the standard flak gear of regular troops. They moved with discipline that spoke of extensive training and combat experience, veterans chosen specifically for this operation, and behind them came the custodians. Not 10 this time, but 30, a full complement of the Emperor's personal guard, their Oromite armor gleaming like a promise of death. They advanced in perfect coordination, guardian spears held at the ready, jump packs allowing them to traverse the difficult terrain with ease. Tyrannes gave the order I had been expecting since the battle began. We would split our forces. The main body would create a diversion, drawing the Imperial forces into a costly engagement while a smaller team, led by Tyrannes himself, would break through to execute the primary mission. I was assigned to the strike team, along with Keldor and 15 other Thunder warriors judged still combat effective. The nature of that mission became clear as Tyrannes outlined the target, a command bunker at the heart of the Imperial camp where our gene seed data and biological samples were stored. He intended to destroy it, eliminating the research that would help perfect the Legion's Astartes at our expense. A final act of defiance against the Creator who had betrayed us. We moved out as our brothers launched their diversionary attack. Their battle cries echoed across the valley as they engaged the Imperial forces head-on, their fury undiminished by wounds or fatigue. Many were already dead warriors walking, their organs failing, their enhanced bodies breaking down, but they fought with the desperation of those with nothing to lose. Our strike team circled wide around the main engagement, using the rough terrain to mask our approach. My body protested each movement, the pain suppressants in my bloodstream barely keeping the agony at manageable levels. The tremor in my arm had worsened to the point where I had abandoned my bolter in favor of weapons that required less fine motor control, a gladius in one hand, a combat knife in the other. We encountered an Imperial Army patrol at the edge of the camp perimeter. Keldor eliminated them before they could raise the alarm, his massive hands snapping necks and crushing windpipes with mechanical efficiency. His own condition had deteriorated visibly since the battle began, the necrotic wound on his shoulder now spread across his chest, the blackened veins visible through rents in his armor. Still, he moved with purpose, his mind focused on the mission even as his body failed him. The command bunker stood at the camp center, surrounded by prefabricated defensive positions and weapons emplacements. Most had been stripped to reinforce the main battle line, leaving only a token force to guard what should have been the most secure facility in the region. They died quickly, their deaths silent as we employed blade and garrote rather than bolter and chainsword. Tyrannes led us into the bunker, his thunder hammer crackling with energy as he smashed through the reinforced door. Inside, Medici personnel and research adept scattered before our advance, their terrified faces registering recognition, then horror as they realized who, what had breached their sanctuary. The laboratory occupied the bunker's lower level. Sterile white surfaces held familiar equipment, gene samplers, cellular regeneration tanks, data cogitators filled with our biological information. Along one wall stood a row of stasis chambers containing organs harvested from fallen thunder warriors, hearts, lungs, enhanced muscle tissue, all carefully preserved for study. For 17 seconds, no one moved. We stared at the physical evidence of our creator's betrayal, the clinical harvesting of our bodies to perfect our replacements. Then Tarani stepped forward, his thunder hammer raised to destroy the nearest stasis chamber. The guardian spear took him through the back, its energy field disrupting his enhanced organs as the adamantium tip burst through his chest plate. Blood fountained from the wound as Tarani staggered forward, his hammer falling from nerveless fingers. Behind him stood a custodian, his golden armor spattered with the blood of thunder warriors, his helmet removed to reveal a face of cold, perfect symmetry. Constantine Valdor, Captain General of the Legio Custodes, had anticipated Tyrannis' move. What followed was slaughter. Three more custodians emerged from concealed positions within the laboratory, their guardian spears cutting down my battle brothers before they could react. Keldor managed to wound one, his combat knife finding a joint in the Oromite armor before a spear thrust removed his head from his shoulders. I fought with the desperation of the doomed, my gladius parrying a guardian spear thrust that would have impaled me. The return stroke opened my opponent's armor at the knee joint, drawing a thin line of blood from the transhuman warrior within. A small victory, quickly answered by a blow that shattered my left shoulder guard and the collarbone beneath. Pain exploded through my nervous system as the stims in my bloodstream failed to compensate for the severity of the injury. I fell back, blade still raised, as the custodian advanced to finish me. His spear rose for the killing thrust, then the world turned white as Tarani's, somehow still alive despite the spear wound through his primary heart, detonated a melta charge he had concealed within his armor. The thermal blast vaporized everything within a 6-meter radius, custodians, laboratory equipment, biological samples, and Tarani's himself. The bunker's structural supports, weakened by the explosion, began to fail as secondary detonations rippled through the facility. I remember little of my escape. Smoke filled the collapsing bunker as I crawled through debris and bodies. My enhanced physiology, failing though it was, kept me alive despite injuries that would have killed an unaugmented human instantly. I emerged into chaos, the camp in flames, the battle on the hillside still raging, Imperial forces diverted by the unexpected explosion at their command center. A maintenance tunnel beneath the camp's eastern perimeter provided my escape route. Ancient infrastructure from before the Age of Strife, it had been incorporated into the base's design without appearing on standard schematics. I had noted it during our initial approach, my enhanced vision detecting the subtle differences in ground composition that indicated a subterranean passage. The tunnel was narrow, designed for service servitors rather than power-armored transhumans. I was forced to abandon pieces of my armor to fit through the tighter sections, each discarded component a surrender of my identity as a thunder warrior. By the time I reached the tunnel's end, 5 kilometers from the camp, I wore only the undersuit and fragmented pieces of my once proud war gear. Night had fallen over Mount Ararat. In the distance, I could see the flashes of weapons fire as the battle continued, my brothers selling their lives dearly against overwhelming odds. Gunships circled the battlefield, their searchlights sweeping the surrounding terrain for SKPs. One passed directly overhead, its powerful lumens briefly illuminating my position before moving on. Either they had failed to spot me or they had deemed one damaged thunder warrior not worth the effort of pursuit. The realization struck me with unexpected force. I had survived, not through superior skill or strength, but through chance and circumstance. Tarani's was dead, Keldor was dead. Vistus, Goda, all my battle brothers, dead or soon to be. The Thunder Warriors, the Emperor's first transhuman legion, were being systematically erased from existence, and Icarius Vex had become something unplanned in the Emperor's grand design, a witness. My body failed me as I attempted to stand. The genetic degradation, accelerated by combat and trauma, caused my remaining functional leg to collapse beneath me. I fell hard against the rocky ground, fresh pain blossoming through my damaged nervous system. Blood leaked from a dozen wounds, and my enhanced healing had all but shut down as my body diverted remaining resources to keep vital organs functioning. In the darkness of that mountain night, as the sounds of my brother's last battle echoed across the valley, I faced the cold truth of our existence. We had been created as weapons, designed with planned obsolescence, and discarded when our purpose was fulfilled. The Emperor, in his infinite wisdom, had deemed us necessary sacrifices for humanity's future, first on the battlefield, then on the altar of genetic research that would perfect our replacements. The betrayal at Ararat was not an act of cruelty, but of cold pragmatism. The Thunder Warriors were flawed tools that had served their purpose, nothing more. I crawled toward the deeper shadows of a rock formation as a custodian kill team moved methodically across the lower slopes, executing wounded Thunder Warriors they discovered with clinical efficiency. Their golden armor caught the moonlight as they worked, guardian spears delivering swift death to my fallen brothers. No words were exchanged, no honors given, just the silent completion of an assigned task. My vision began to fade as my secondary heart struggled to maintain blood pressure. The pain receded, replaced by a spreading numbness that crept from my extremities toward my core. I recognized the symptoms of final systemic collapse, the end stage of the genetic degradation that had been written into our creation. Yet something within me refused to surrender to the darkness. Some spark of defiance, or perhaps merely the stubborn survival instinct engineered into every Thunder Warrior, kept my heart's beating, my lungs drawing painful breaths. I would not die on Mount Ararat. Not while I could still bear witness to the truth of our betrayal. As consciousness slipped away, my last thought was not of revenge, but of memory. Someone needed to remember the Thunder Warriors as we truly were, not as the legends the Imperium would create to replace the truth, but as transhuman warriors who had given everything in service to a vision we barely understood, only to be discarded when a better weapon came along. I would be that memory for as long as my failing body allowed. Pain had become such a constant companion that I barely recognized its absence anymore. The silence of my nerve endings was more disturbing than their screaming had ever been. My body knew it was dying, it had simply stopped bothering to inform me. 2 centuries had passed since Mount Ararat, 200 years of hiding, scraping, and performing crude self-surgeries to keep my failing systems operational. The underhive of the Terran Arcologies had become my sanctuary, a labyrinthine warren of forgotten infrastructure and abandoned habitation blocks where even the Emperor's eyes could not easily penetrate. Here, among the dregs of humanity that the glorious Imperium preferred to forget, a broken Thunder Warrior could disappear. My makeshift medical chamber was a repurposed maintenance vault, its rusted walls lined with scavenged equipment and stolen supplies. Blood-crusted surgical implements hung from hooks alongside modified power tools that served as crude approximations of proper Medici devices. The stench of antiseptic barely masked the underlying smell of rot, both from my slowly failing body and from the various organic components I'd harvested over the decades to replace my deteriorating parts. I flexed my left hand, watching the mismatched fingers respond with varying degrees of success. The thumb and forefinger were still my original tissue, though the skin had taken on a waxy, grayish hue. The middle and ring fingers had been replaced 30 years ago with digits taken from an administratum adept who'd wandered too far into my territory. The pinky was newer, vat grown from genetic material I'd stolen during a raid on a mid-hive medical facility. None matched in size or color, giving my hand the appearance of a poorly assembled puzzle. The recording device before me hummed softly, its ancient mechanisms capturing my testimony for posterity. I had begun this chronicle 3 weeks earlier, when my primary heart had started showing signs of imminent failure. The device itself was a relic, a memory capture unit from the early days of the Unification Wars that I'd salvaged from a decommissioned museum. Its storage crystals would preserve my words long after my body had finally surrendered to entropy. My testimony was nearly complete. The events at Mount Ararat had been the most difficult to recount, not because of failing memory, but because the betrayal still burned like acid in my thoughts even after 2 centuries. What followed had been merely survival, and survival made for less compelling history. After escaping the custodian kill teams, I had spent weeks in the wilderness, my enhanced physiology barely keeping me alive as I performed crude field surgeries on myself. A chance encounter with a nomadic tribe in the wastelands beyond the mountains had saved me, not through their medical knowledge, which was primitive, but through their ignorance of what I truly was. To them, I was merely a giant wounded warrior who might offer protection in exchange for shelter. They had no concept of thunder warriors or the Emperor's betrayal. I remained with them for 3 years, regaining strength and scavenging what medical supplies I could from abandoned settlements. When Imperial survey teams began mapping the region for expansion, I knew I had to return to Terra itself, to disappear into the one place too vast and crowded for even the Emperor's agents to search thoroughly. The journey back had nearly killed me. My genetic degradation accelerated with each passing month, requiring increasingly desperate measures to counteract. I learned to cannibalize my own augmented tissues, sacrificing non-essential enhancements to preserve core functionality. My enhanced strength diminished, my accelerated healing slowed, but I endured. Terra had changed dramatically in my absence. The Emperor's Great Crusade was well underway, with regular announcements of new worlds brought into compliance by the Legion's Astartes. The palace had grown into a sprawling complex that dominated the horizon, its golden spires reaching toward the heavens like the Emperor's own ambition made manifest. Propaganda broadcasts celebrated the achievements of the Space Marine Legions, our replacements. While the Thunder Warriors had already faded into obscure historical footnotes, our sacrifice rewritten as heroic last stands against impossible odds. I settled in the underhive of what had once been called Europa, establishing a hidden sanctuary in the forgotten sublayers beneath a Manufactorum district. There, among the discarded and forgotten, I became something of a ghost, appearing only to secure necessary supplies before vanishing back into the shadows. The Underhive denizens created myths about me over the decades, the giant, the pale hunter, the Emperor's ghost. I encouraged none of them, but their fear served as an effective deterrent against intrusion. Survival required adaptation. I developed an extensive knowledge of human anatomy through necessity, learning to identify which organs and tissues could be harvested to temporarily replace my failing systems. I became proficient at crude genetic manipulation, using stolen equipment to extend the viability of transplanted materials. I created chemical compounds that mimicked the stabilizing agents once provided by Imperial Medici, though never with the same effectiveness. The tremors worsened with each passing decade. By the first century of my exile, I could no longer hold a weapon without extensive nerve-dampening medications. By the beginning of the second, I had been forced to replace entire muscle groups with synthetic alternatives that provided basic functionality without the fine control of my original enhancements. Now, as I approached what I knew would be my final recording, even these measures were failing. My secondary heart had stopped beating 12 days ago. My primary struggled to compensate, its overtaxed chambers laboring to push increasingly viscous blood through deteriorating vessels. My remaining lung functioned at perhaps 20% capacity, forcing each breath to be a conscious effort. My enhanced nervous system misfired constantly, sending phantom pain signals from limbs long since replaced or removed. I was, by any reasonable medical assessment, already dead. Only the stubborn resilience engineered into Thunder Warrior physiology and my own refusal to surrender kept my organic systems functioning. The recording device blinked, indicating it had reached a new storage crystal. I adjusted my position, feeling the grinding of poorly fused vertebrae as I leaned closer to the audio capture array. This testimony was not for the Emperor or his servants who had written us out of history. It was for the citizens of the Imperium who would never know how their unity had been purchased, with the blood of warriors created to be discarded. I had watched from the shadows as the Imperium grew, expanded, and changed. I had witnessed the construction of the Great Astronomicon, its psychic beacon allowing Imperial ships to navigate the warp across vast distances. I had seen the Space Marine Legions depart on crusade after crusade, returning with tales of conquest that eclipsed even the bloodiest campaigns of the Unification Wars. I had observed the growing cult of worship around the Emperor, despite his own apparent rejection of divine status, and I had noticed the first signs of discord among his Primarchs, the strange behavior of the 17th Legion, the increasing isolation of the 15th, the growing arrogance of the 16th. Even from my limited vantage in the Underhive, I could sense the fractures forming in the Imperium's foundation. The Emperor's dream of unity, purchased with Thunder Warrior blood, was showing signs of the same instability that had plagued our enhanced bodies. There was a certain bitter irony in that observation. We had been deemed too unstable, too aggressive, too independent for the Emperor's grand vision. Yet his perfect Primarchs and their legions Astartes seemed to be developing the very same flaws, albeit more slowly and perhaps more catastrophically. I had no illusions about my own nature. The Thunder Warriors had been created as instruments of conquest, designed for maximum shock value and overwhelming force. We were living weapons, and weapons rarely get to choose how they are used or when they are discarded. The Emperor had created us with specific parameters in mind, and when those parameters were no longer required, he had simply developed a more suitable tool for the next phase of his plan. The betrayal at Mount Ararat had not been personal, it had been practical. A more rational mind than mine might even call it necessary. The Thunder Warriors were deteriorating, our enhanced bodies breaking down, our minds increasingly prone to instability and psychosis. We were dangerous, unpredictable, and obsolete. From a purely strategic perspective, our elimination was the logical choice, but logic offered cold comfort to the betrayed. I shifted again, feeling a sharp pain as something ruptured in my abdomen. Warm wetness spread across my midsection, internal bleeding from a failed organ or ruptured vessel. I had no means to repair the damage this time. No scavenged parts, no crude surgical techniques, no stolen medications would reverse the cascade of failures now accelerating through my enhanced physiology. The end had finally arrived after 2 centuries of desperate postponement. I found myself wondering if any other Thunder Warriors had survived Mount Ararat. In my early years of hiding, I had searched for signs of others like me, distinctive killing patterns, unusual thefts of medical supplies, rumors of giants in the shadows. I had found nothing conclusive. If others had escaped the custodian kill teams, they had either disguised their nature more effectively than I had, or they had succumbed to their genetic degradation long ago. I was, as far as I knew, the last of the Thunder Warriors, the final remnant of the Emperor's first transhuman legion, the sole witness to both our glory and our betrayal. The recording device continued its silent vigil as my breathing became more labored. Blood bubbled in my throat, forcing me to pause frequently to clear my airway. My vision had begun to narrow, darkness encroaching from the periphery as my brain received decreasing oxygen. The pain had returned now, a burning agony that spread from my core to my extremities as tissues died and toxins accumulated in my bloodstream. I thought of Taranis in his final moments, impaled by a custodian guardian spear, yet still defiant enough to deny the Emperor his research with one final, destructive act. I thought of Keldor fighting to the last despite the necrosis consuming him from within. I thought of the hundreds of Thunder Warriors who had died at Mount Ararat, selling their lives dearly against overwhelming odds, never surrendering despite knowing they had been betrayed by their creator. We had been made for war, and in war we had found purpose. Not glory, glory was for remembrance, and we had been deliberately forgotten. Not honor, honor required acknowledgement, and we had been systematically erased. Purpose, the simple, direct application of our designed function. We killed, we conquered, we unified, and when that purpose was fulfilled, we were discarded. The greatest irony, perhaps, was that despite the betrayal, most Thunder Warriors had died still believing in the Emperor's vision. Not out of personal loyalty to a creator who had abandoned them, but out of commitment to the ideal he represented. Unity, strength, humanity triumphant among the stars. We had given everything to that dream, including, ultimately, our existence. My primary heart stuttered, then ceased. The pain intensified briefly, then began to fade as neurological functions shut down. My remaining hand, the mismatched, grotesque assemblage of original and scavenged parts, fell limply to my side. The recording device continued its work, capturing the wet, rattling sounds of my final breaths. In my dimming consciousness, a final thought formed with unexpected clarity. The Thunder Warriors had not failed the Emperor. We had fulfilled our purpose exactly as designed. We had been the bloody blade that carved out the foundation of his Imperium, the terrifying weapon that had broken the backs of his enemies on Terra. We had been created for a specific task, and that task had been completed. The failure, if such existed, lay not with the weapon, but with the wielder who feared to keep it once its immediate purpose was served. Darkness consumed my vision entirely now. The underhive sounds, distant machinery, recycled air hissing through ancient vents, the scurrying of vermin faded to silence. My enhanced senses, which had once allowed me to track enemies across battlefields and detect the slightest changes in an opponent's stance, registered nothing but the slowing of my own biological functions. The recording device would continue until its power source failed or its storage crystals were filled. My testimony, the true account of the Thunder Warrior's creation, triumphs, and betrayal, would remain in this forgotten corner of Terra's underhive until someone discovered it. Perhaps it would be found by servants of the Imperium who would destroy it to preserve the official narrative. Perhaps it would be discovered by rebels or heretics who would use it to undermine faith in the Emperor. Or perhaps it would simply decay along with my remains, the truth lost forever beneath the weight of Imperial myth-making. It no longer mattered to me. I had survived, I had witnessed, I had recorded. My duty, self-appointed though it was, had been fulfilled. I was Carius Vex, Thunder Warrior of the 9th Primus Cohort, the last of the Emperor's first super soldiers. And as my enhanced body finally surrendered to its designed obsolescence, I died as I had lived, in service to a dream of unity that had never included me.